Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. This is Michael W. Dean. Today we're talking to Mike Makes Right again. What's up, Mike?
Hi, Michael. Good to hear from you again.
Why does Mike make right?
Because nobody else will.
Ha! Is that just a, it's not a right-wing thing, right? It's a correct thing. Like, right, correct. Mike makes correct.
Well, it's a play on might makes right.
Oh, of course. I mean, I know that. But I was just wondering if it was something you made up to piss off your left-wing friends in San Francisco.
And it's such an easy thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you had any encounters with any San Francisco Obama humpers lately?
I sure haven't. I try to stay away from them as much as possible.
That's a good thing, staying away from them. How do they make your life worse?
Well, it's interesting because it's not like I like social conservatives either. Progressive liberals, I can't explain it, but in terms of groups of people that just irk me to no end, they top the list. I hate the smugness and the certainty of their positions, and the fact that if you own a gun, you're somehow barbaric. Things like that, you know, like you're such a, you know, you're an ape in this society because you want to protect yourself, as if that's somehow a bad thing. And so, you know, they've got all these kinds of qualities that are very much like that. That's just one example.
That's a real disconnect, too, because a lot of them want society to be improved in their mind by having a lot more laws, and they don't see the disconnect of, you know, laws are enforced by cops with guns. So if they're wanting more laws, they're basically wanting more cops, because cops don't even have the ability or numbers to enforce all the laws already on the books. And if you add a whole bunch more laws to try to make things better, you're going to necessitate more cops with more guns and bigger guns and more oppression.
And the funny thing is that some of the greatest minds that have ever talked about an ultra totalitarian society have been leftists. I mean, look at Orwell, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah. You know? I never understood, his whole critique was on communism, and he was a socialist, and I really just see those as different points on the same timeline. I mean, people who believe one system or another would argue, no, they're different things, but one tends to lead to the other.
Absolutely.
Historically.
I mean, what did Hans Hermann Hoppe say about democracy? He said, it's not communism, but it's just a softer form of communism.
Yeah.
You know, it's all variants of the same thing. And, you know, to be frank, it's not like I don't appreciate differences in leftist types of thought. I certainly think that you look at somebody like Mikhail Bakunin, who was an actual anarchist communist, as opposed to somebody like a Marxist who is very much in favor of state control. There are communists and leftists out there who are for voluntary association and their leftist ideals. I'm okay with that. You know, it's just that isn't what people in the modern age are really advocating. They're advocating this weird, creepy,
sticky statist. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sticky. You're right. It's
there's two thoughts I have on that. One is Hans Hermann Hoppe. You mentioned, this is kind of funny. Myself, and Nima Vidati and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, all thought Hans Hermann Hoppe had been dead for like 150 years because he's got a really weird old name and people quote him, but they never say where they're quoting it. They never say, oh, on his Facebook page, Hans, he's alive and well and not much older than me and like a professor in Denmark or somewhere. I don't know where, but I thought he was dead. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, he sounds like somebody that would have hung out with Einstein or Bertrand Russell. Or
Lysander Spooner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you would have studied under Lysander Spooner or something. But no, man.
Exactly.
He's very much alive. And what was the other thing he said? When people are advocating for left anarchism, actual anarchism, which was the initial idea behind the Russian Revolution, was let's get rid of the government and have an anarchist paradise. But then... as Animal Farm by Orwell, well portrayed. No, it's just you get a different set of tyrants. But the thing I don't understand is why people who are advocating for left voluntarist anarchism, why they're not just voluntarist or panopolist, people who say, well, you should be able to pick whatever you want. Why, if everyone's going to be able to pick voluntarily what they want, why are they advocating for that's the thing you should pick?
Yeah, it's they hold on to that vestige of the left-right paradigm that a lot of us who just may identify as voluntarist or anti-statist or whatever, we don't call ourselves right libertarians or right.
They call us that though because we call ourselves anarcho-capitalists and like, oh, capitalists, you're right wing.
Well, this is the issue I have with the so-called liberty movement is there's so many vague and imprecise terms that nobody seems to really know what to call themselves. And we acknowledge that definitions change over time. And in fact, libertarian isn't even accurate. In fact, the original libertarians were socialist anarchists, and anarchists in the traditional sense do not believe in hierarchy. They think it's essentially immoral, and somebody like an anarcho-capitalist does not necessarily have a problem with hierarchies. And we're not even classical liberals. A classical liberal is kind of like a minarchist. So it's very hard for the so-called right voluntarist to even get that correct term out there. I mean, I think the best that I've come across is just that I'm an anti-statist who is a proponent of a private law society, but that's a mouthful. Nobody's going to want to say that off the top of their head.
I think the term that's going to win out is voluntarist. I decided that this week, and that's not a term I identify myself with, but I wouldn't argue with someone if they called me that, but... And this is kind of based on a hunch, and it's kind of based on a little bit of evidence of that seems to be the one that's catching on as sexy. Like, there's a bunch of groups on the internet where people are like, upload a picture of yourself on the voluntarist site. And it's like sexy young people looking to the camera, pointing at the camera and saying, I'm a voluntarist.
And you've hit on something that is very important, is that whatever word works in the so-called marketplace of ideas that appeals to the youth is going to be the one that wins out, whether it's the best one or not. We're going to have to roll with it because, let's face it, it's kind of kids that make the new slang and the new terminology relevant. Not that we don't contribute our own part, but there's certainly a lot more mass adoption at the adolescent and teen stages. So...
Well, historically, I think that, teen and 20-year-old people have often driven changes in society.
Right.
And
they've also been the purveyor of the most violence. I mean, it still holds true when you look at any type of violence in the society. It's usually males between the ages of 15 and 27.
And that's also the people that are used as tools in institutional violence. I mean, who do they send to war? They don't send 49-year-olds like me. Or how old are you now?
42, almost.
Old
politicians hide themselves away, just like they say, just like Ozzy says.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, young people. Get off my lawn. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I suffer from like not in my backyardism. That's the thing that I get people criticized for. Like, I think that people should be able to, you know, freely sell anything they want, but someone rented a house on our block, and they just moved out, so I can talk about them. I think they got evicted because we saw police come by and give them papers, and about 2 weeks later they moved out. But let's just put it this way: there was a car parking about every half hour, and someone would go into that house for about 5 minutes. And I don't like that because that's bringing a bunch of dirt hippies to my block, and it's normally a really quiet block. And there were no problems with them or anything, you know, they were quiet, but. When you have that mass amount of dirt hippies coming onto a block, at some point it's going to lead to some crimes statistically. So I was kind of glad they left. I'm kind of glad they left without a police raid. They just moved on. Not in my backyard. NIMBY. Do you know that term?
Yeah. Yeah. They've used that quite a bit in progressive towns like San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Yeah. Like, I'm all in favor of nuclear power plants, but I don't want one on my block.
Well, and that's just it, is that everyone has a different set of preferences, and that's why there really shouldn't be a state, because you're never going to get a big group of people all on the same page without using force. If it were such a great idea, people would join up and form collectives voluntarily. And we just don't see that, or we don't have the opportunity to try to do that. But, you know, one thing I will say to your point about sort of undesirable people coming into your neighborhood, you know, that's going to still exist whether we live in a stateless or a state world. And one of the things I was thinking about.
Yeah, but if pot were legal, they wouldn't come in my neighborhood for it. They'd all go to Walmart for it. And there's already exactly. Undesirable people at Walmart. And that's part of the joy of going to Walmart.
You can make the argument that because the state exists with its weird set of incentives, yes, they could have the incentive to want to come to your neighborhood for a reason where otherwise they may not. But one of the things I was thinking about recently is this, especially in the anarcho-libertarian world, we sort of have a couple of camps. I mean, we have a lot of schools of thought, but there happens to be two that are just sort of that traditional old left and right. And what it is on one side, we have this kind of libertine libertarian who just doesn't have any concern about morality, who lives their life like a hedonist, but doesn't care, you know, isn't trying to stop other people from doing the same. And then on the flip side, we have these very stuffy social conservative types that you wonder if they ever get out of their suit with the bow tie. You know, are they wearing that to bed, for fuck's sake? I mean, how stuffy are you? But it's interesting because that was something that came to a head, I think, even in the 60s counterculture. I mean, look at Jim Morrison, for example. He was tripping balls on LSD, talking about that he was the Lizard King and, you know, railing against the Vietnam War. Meanwhile, his Papa Morrison is on an aircraft carrier and he's an admiral in the Navy fighting the Vietnam War. And there's just these two extremes that are just going head to head. And the thing that nobody ever seems to talk about is that you can be an anarcho-libertarian and be kind of somewhere in the middle. I mean, I don't want to be so open-minded that my brains fall out.
That's funny. On the other hand, my sister gave me a sampler that she made when I was 12 that said, don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, there's something about like dirty hippies who are just have no self-respect and they're letting it all hang out to the point of it's embarrassing. You're embarrassed for them.
That was right after her returning Vietnam vet boyfriend turned me on to pot. Now, he was kind of an inspiration for me because he wasn't like a lot of hippies I knew, because for one thing, he got up after he was out of the military, he got up every morning and did like 1,000 sit-ups. The guy was in better shape than like Iggy Pop. And the other thing was he carried a loaded rifle in his trunk. Not a lot of hippies did that. And he wasn't a radical. He was for self-defense. But he was like, you know, I learned about guns over in Vietnam, and I'm going to own one here. I kind of like that in a hippie.
I do, too. And I like that it's more of a, you know, it's possible to be a sort of centrist voluntarist. You know, you're not, I don't want to live in an intentional community where everyone's just exposing their genitals 24/7. And at the same time, I don't want to be, you know, in
somewhere where that would be illegal.
Or you're in another private law society where you used the wrong fork when you went to go eat your salad and everyone's like, you know, gasp. Yeah, it's just, it doesn't have to be one or the other. And I think you and I we've had similar circumstances, at least when we lived in LA. We had a crazy set of neighbors who would just be loud at all hours of the night. And you and I were one of the few people that didn't call the cops on them, that would actually go knock on their door and say, I'm your neighbor, I know you don't know me, but can you please turn it down? And that's the bit, like, I don't want to have to force my set of preferences upon somebody. So the best way I know how to do that is to try to deal with them directly. So much of this statism is all about people's fear of conflict or just even talking to their neighbors. They would rather just send the guy with the gun to solve the problem for them.
Yeah, yeah. And the people who would call the cops on a loud neighbor and send a guy with a gun over there would think you were barbaric if you put a gun in your pocket right. and went before right. going over to ask him quietly and, you know, in case he attacks right. you for asking him nicely. You live in Northern California, right?
That's right.
I had an interesting dream the other night that you may dig. I had a dream that California, to solve their budget problem, sold Northern California to George Soros. And he went on TV and said, hi, I'm George Soros. I now own where you live. And nothing's going to change except if you get married, I get to have sex with the bride before you do. And that's kind of what I think of that kind of uber liberalism. You know, it's that kind of thing.
It's not that far out of the realm of possibility. That's for damn sure. You know, if you can ever convince a liberal of voluntarism, that could be the type of world where they'd prefer to live in.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who's rich, who shares their values, who owns most of the land that surrounds them.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, and cool with the other two things that he changed were all drugs were now legal and all guns were now illegal.
Yeah, there you go.
And he gets to screw your bride before you do. So, I mean, I think that's, I actually dreamt this. I had a dream about this. And I kind of think that's what the liberals would want, a lot of them, in where you live.
Yeah. Well, and think about what, now flip that around and think about what a voluntarist social conservative community would look like. And it's basically all the opposite of that.
Yeah, I think if there's anywhere that has the power to become that, it's where I live in Wyoming. You know, I think if Wyoming seceded, it would become kind of Christian Sharia by law.
Right.
Yeah, right. It'd be like, we're going to enforce the Constitution and then a few other things, too.
Well, you know, this brings up something that I've been thinking about lately, is that you don't have to be an optimist to be an anarchist or an anti-statist, and you can just look at it as a sort of moral position. In other words, if somebody goes, well, what happens if you have this anarchy and it's way worse than what we have now? Well, so what? Is basically my response, because I can't guarantee that it's going to be one way or the other. It might be worse under anarchy.
Well, you also can't guarantee that things aren't going to get a lot worse under the state.
Right, right. And there's no guarantee anywhere. In fact, the fewer assumptions we make, the better. Because when you make too many assumptions, there's just way more room for error. And the best we can say is that these intentional communities that could arise out of a state could be as bad or worse, I mean, or better, or the same. The only thing that would be different was that there was no centralized authority on the use of force in that geographical location. We just are removing one moral hazard. That's all. We're taking away from the equation that is the interaction of humans. We're trying to pull one piece of the equation that we think is flawed inherently, and then we want to just try to get along, and that may or may not happen. There's no guarantee.
Whenever people advocate against removing a state monopoly on force, you know, basically whenever people say anarchy wouldn't work because who would fix the roads? Or when they ask kind of more detailed or intelligent questions, you know, but they always ask the same questions like, well, wouldn't there be roving bands of marauders? And I'm like, there's roving bands of marauders now. They have badges. But the thing that I always come up with is, just because I personally don't have the answer of how things would work is not a vote against that it would work. There's a lot of smarter minds than me that spend a lot of time centrally planning LibPair or how libertarian paradise would work. And, you know, if you ask me how the roads would work, I mean, it's like asking, you know, a leftist who doesn't know anything about cars, well, how do you change a transmission? You know, there's people who would do that. Who would build the roads? The same people that are good at building roads now, except they wouldn't have the jacked up price of, you know, including the mafia and the unions in it, too.
Well, there's so much fear based in that argument, too, because if there's an unknown, then people go straight to the argument for apocalypse, and they think that the worst of people is going to display itself. It's kind of like what if you've seen any kind of theist-atheist debate, sometimes a theist will come at an atheist and say, well, if God didn't exist, how can there be morals? And the response is, so let's pretend God is dead tomorrow. Do you really think people are going to wake up and go, okay, God is dead, let's load up the pickup truck with every gun we have in this house and just start killing, raping, and stealing everything in sight, like as if that were going to be the default position? Not that it couldn't happen. It's just that people on that debate that are theists can't imagine how somebody could be moral without a belief in the supreme creator. It's just this fear-based argument that in reality, especially when it's against the anarchist position, is really a straw man, because we're not making an assumption here. We're just talking about a society without centralized coercion. You know, it's a moral position, and people just can't seem to, they want to know, they want to be pragmatic. They want solutions. If you're not contributing to the solution, you're part of the problem. It's a very progressive, sustainable type of mindset, you know? And I do not like your attitude. You know, they just have this, like, you have to solve it on pragmatic grounds.
Worms.
Which is insane, because there's no principle involved. There's no principle.
Let's take a little break and go to the market here and come back for further reviews.
All right.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Did your world collapse when Ron Paul didn't win? Don't keep hoping for some great man to fix government through government. Complete your evolution today to full-on anarcho-capitalist. Reward your brain with the Freedom Fiends and quit breaking your heart with some politician. While the libertarians argue,
but who would build the roads?
The Freedom Fiends have already built the roads and moved on to making the great media content of the libertarian paradise. FreedomFiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
Welcome back to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. We're talking to Mike Makes Right. How you doing, Mike?
Very good. How you doing?
I'm good. And this is Mr. Michael Dean. And yeah, I was saying in the break that you were like, how is it? And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. You're getting pretty political, though. You usually don't. And what did you say? Something about having to.
Yeah, I mean, it's the state is all around us, and it's always trying to worm its way into our world.
Worms.
And so I'm only political, exactly. And I'm only political in the sense that I have to be. It's a type of self-defense. You know, I don't want to know about the latest gun regulation or the latest law about gay marriage. I don't give a flying fuck about all that shit. And yet it's kind of like, Michael in The Godfather. You try to get out, but they pull you back in. And you do need to be aware, even if you are someone who rejects the state and you don't think it has any legitimacy, because if you just put your head in the sand, that's what everyone else in America is doing that doesn't understand anything. There's so many stupid people in this country that do exactly that, but yet they go to the ballot box. They actually fucking vote. That shit has an effect on you and me.
Yeah. It's kind of like how atheists tend to talk about God more than religious people. You know, anarchists tend to talk about politics more than the average person, because anarchists notice it, because everything's an intrusion. When you finally go that distance from minarchist to anarchist, or just even from statist to anarchist, or even statist to minarchist, it's kind of like when you first get into recovery and stop drinking and doing drugs, and you're surrounded by people that drink and do drugs. You didn't really notice everyone was drinking and doing drugs till you stop, and you don't really notice how much everything is political coercion and coercion until you give up and renounce political coercion or coercion at all. You know, you start to see it everywhere.
Oh yeah. I mean, we are just dripping with the state's stinky, sticky, sweaty jizz all over our fucking face. You know, I mean, it's, you can't go anywhere and be devoid of it. It's just, you look at all the products on your table, you wonder how they would be different if there weren't these regulations that force them to be a certain way, or at least play in a certain set of parameters. You know, that's the thing that people never can seem to get their heads around. All the interference in the market creates products that maybe aren't necessarily as much in demand as they would be had there been a free society to develop that product in a certain way.
Well, one of my answers when people say who would build the roads, I mean, this is kind of hyperbole, but there's something to it, to say we wouldn't need roads. Everyone would have flying cars. Because,
you know, hovercrafts.
All the we were promised flying cars as kids. That was what they said in the 70s, that there would be by the year 2000. And I think the reason there aren't is because all of that science was squandered on building drones.
You could be right. And to that, to your greater point, when people talk about, you know, who would do X in a free society, who would herp the derp is what I like to call it, because you can really just insert anything into there. And somebody's always going to have a fear-based issue about something getting done in a free society. But also in my own life, I mean, I live just on the outskirts of the Bay Area, at a very liberal area, but I happen to where I live, it's very anarchistic in the sense that the roads aren't really all that maintained very well, and most people don't care. In fact, we have a little creek running by one of the main roads to get to my house, and the weeds are overgrown, and I never see a city vehicle actually coming out there and whacking it. But what I do see is just this guy who lives in town, who shows up, who trims it all down for everyone once every 3 months. So, you know, when people go, who would, you know, trim the trails and make sure that they don't get too high so there's a fire hazard? Well, in my neighborhood, there's somebody doing that, and the fucking state isn't doing it. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, and
it's interesting that people don't acknowledge the own tiny bit of anarchy that's actually in their own lives. Because everybody, we talk about the state just encompassing our whole lives, but it's not that there's no anarchy. There's just very little of it. But when we do have it, most people aren't even aware.
Yep. Do you live near Bolinas, California?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Somewhat close. It's a coastal town.
Yeah.
I won't say where, but it's south of there. Put it that way.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's full of total liberals who probably vote, but they're kind of anarchic in a way in that they don't want to be found or contacted by the outside world. Right. I remember for decades, whenever the state would put up the sign that says, turn here for Bolinas, people in Bolinas would come remove the sign.
Yeah, I mean, we have, there in our neighborhood, there is two streets that intersect and they go off at sort of 45 degree angles. And it's a really sketchy intersection and there's no stop signs, but yet everybody seems to figure it out. It's a sketchy area because there's no like, okay, now you go. But what ends up happening is people get to this standstill and then they look at each other and everyone's kind of aware. I mean, granted, there's going to be people who aren't paying attention, but the people that live there will look and see and will wave you on or you'll wave them on. And it all seems to work out. It's funny that here's yet another example of anarchy that works. You know, we don't need to spend money to put in a sophisticated traffic system to solve this problem. I mean, sometimes you do need that solution on a road, but here's a situation where there's no demand for it because it works.
You know, I would say that anybody in Bolinas who votes in national elections, anybody who feels that way of like, you know, supports taking down the sign so outsiders can't find the place, who also votes in national elections is a hypocrite because they don't want people even from San Francisco coming to their town, but they want to take my guns away 1,500 right. miles away in Wyoming.
Oof, they're so close.
So
it's
close.
Too bad.
Yeah.
There's so many people that you just have hope for so many years that just never seem to make it. I mean, we were there too ourselves, and we made it to the other side, so to speak. But, you know, we've known, you and I both have known a lot of people in common who we had hopes for that just never seemed to make it any further. And you wonder if they're ever going to get there, if they're ever going to see the flaw that we see. I mean, you know, hell, we might be wrong about that, but we hope we're not because we've at least considered it. You don't even know if these people have actually considered the hypocrisy that they're inflicting upon the world.
You got it a little bit before I did. When we lived in LA, I was pretty apolitical and just caring about art and stuff. And you were talking, actually, though, you were listening to like right-wing radio at the time. But when were you a statist and how did you become not one and how long did it take?
It took quite a long time. I've been calling myself a libertarian for at least 10 years now. So the thing that trapped me was courts and the military and also immigration. And those issues are hot button issues. And that kept me there for years and years. And it was a combination of a lot of different people making just better arguments. I thought the immigration argument was a slam dunk that, you know, these people are coming to our country and using our resources and not paying taxes. And that
remove,
just like
remove the resources and the taxes. And then you can let anybody in who's willing to do
right.
anything, you know?
Right, right. And it was people that just made better arguments around those issues. And that's kind of like what I tried to do. I'm not an anarchist and I'm certainly not an atheist because I want to be popular. In fact, it's one of the most loneliest positions that you can take in this world. And the reason why I is being somebody who's against sort of the common status quo. With religious things,
I think the loneliest thing you can be is not an atheist, because atheists are absolutely sure there's no God and they have a lot of people who agree with them.
Actually, that's not true though. That's okay. Not accurate in terms of the definition. I mean, you have to be precise when you talk about atheism, because when it comes to atheism, I'm usually more of an agnostic atheist. So you can be both, because an agnostic is somebody who tries to explain tries to answer the knowledge question, like, I know that there's no God, or I know that there isn't no God, versus atheism, which is just a belief question. I don't believe in God. You can be an agnostic atheist. An atheist could be what you said. There is a type of atheist that knows that there's no God. That's a strong atheist. It depends on what God somebody is positing.
All right.
You know, I'm often a strong atheist, at least in terms of like the traditional monotheistic religions. I don't think they're, in fact, I'm certain that they're not correct. But when it comes to deistic concept of God, I might be an agnostic atheist. So the distinction does matter. All I was trying to get at was that it's lonely in the sense that there's not a lot of other people who believe that.
I think the loneliest thing you can be theistically is to be absolutely sure there is a God and absolutely sure he doesn't like you. Which was the main character in Fight Club described himself that way. And I was like, wow, that's heavy. It's a very lonely thing. There aren't a lot of people who feel that way.
Oh, sure. If you added, you know, nihilism to that combination, then it gets even weirder. So it's tough in the sense that we just try to go where the better argument. I mean, at least I try to, and I'm not saying that I have a monopoly on truth by any means, but what I try to do in my life is wherever there's a better argument, wherever the evidence is better, that's where I go. And if it leads me to places that are uncomfortable, tough shit. Because how else can I defend something if I can't at least put up an argument, some type of logical argument, or some example of it actually happening in the real world? You know, if it's just fairies and fucking unicorns, then what am I doing here? It's just emotional. In fact, this is the charge I have for a lot of liberals, is that they're very much, it's what Reagan said, the problem with our liberal friends is that they know so much that isn't so. But, you know, it's anarchism just in its essence is just not necessarily a fun place to be because you have to, you're just immediately ostracizing yourself from a lot of different groups.
Although I think if you include voluntarism, which I believe is anarchism in its purest, you know, voluntarism in its purest form is anarchy. I would say that it's getting more popular and it's gaining more ground. And actually, didn't the Department of Homeland Security use the word voluntarism to in one of their monthly missives of who might be a terrorist? Didn't they actually use the word voluntarism recently?
I don't know. I
would say that when Janet Napolitano wants you dead, you're not the total sliver minority anymore.
Wow. Yeah. I guess you've arrived, right? In a creepy way.
Yeah.
That's sort of like, we want to kill you because you're a threat to us. It's interesting. You wonder what somebody like Janet Napolitano or any of those people, what they actually think about voluntarism. Do they know what it is? I wonder if they've just, it's a buzzword that they've heard, that they have some idea, or have they read the wiki, or what have they done?
They conflate it with, you know, properly conflate it with thinking that government authority is immoral. You know, it's kind of like one of the things they're going after is sovereign citizens. And sovereign citizens are kind of a weird group because they kind of live in a fantasy world, at least the some of the people that use that term, because they rightfully say that no one should have authority over them just because someone wrote something down on paper. But then they act as if that's reality and that they can just use magic words with, you know, cops and judges and they'll go away.
And it's same thing that Erwin Schiff tried to use in his defense of not paying taxes. Like, he thought he had a slam dunk in this certain clause that all he'd have to say were these magic words and the government would have to lay off. And that's not reality. Dude's in jail.
Yeah. You know? And, but the underlying crux of that no one morally has a right to aggress on you because someone wrote something down on paper is just. And it's what I believe and what you believe and what voluntarists believe and what anarcho-capitalists believe and what true libertarians believe. And apparently the government is now saying that's a threat, that if you peacefully believe that they shouldn't be able to do what they're doing, even if you don't act on it at all. It's kind of getting to this thought crime thing to where, you know, I mean, I'm wondering when they're going to pass, you know, an update of the Patriot Act that includes language that says, you know, if you describe yourself as voluntarist or whatever, we can indefinitely detain you. I mean, theoretically, they probably already could, but they haven't gone. What they've been doing a lot lately with laws is writing new laws that clarify their right of oppression of old laws. You know, I mean, really, there's nothing in CISPA that isn't between the lines in the Patriot Act, and there's nothing in the Patriot Act that isn't between the lines in, you know, the Alien and Sedition Acts from the 1800s that were never taken off the books and were used by presidents against people. But they just have to write more laws because that's what lawmakers do. But it seems like there's a lot of bureaucrats, like people at the Department of Homeland Security, who do not have the legal power to make laws, who are making laws by issuing memos these days. You know, like they'll say returning vets are probably a threat, and then returning vets are treated like they're a threat and detained or arrested for this or that, something that's already on the books, but not legally, and they get away with it. You know, it's kind of like they just creep it, and then there's a new normal, and then they creep it, and then there's a new normal. They're just really square, and they're so square, all of them.
So square. And the interesting thing is that there's anarchy in between government agencies, because if you talk about the Department of Homeland Security doing that, there's going to be people in other parts of the government that don't agree with that and don't have any jurisdiction to do anything about it. And so we even have anarchy within our own government that people just don't even see.
Yeah. When people say the government as if it's this solid thing, you know,
gelatinous blob.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of is in some ways, but it kind of isn't in other ways. Like, for instance, you know, federal judges will strike down something done at a state level. Exactly. I mean, that's a perfect example of it.
Well, the biggest problem, though, that people don't seem to realize that might be good in the sense that there's an internal check and there's a balance internally. But what they don't see is that with any dispute between the state and an individual, the state gets to be the arbiter of justice. So they already have the upper hand. And people talk about fairness in law and social justice. I would like to say to a progressive that if you're so concerned with social justice, that you should reject a monopoly in law, because we want to have, if you want true progressivism in the original sense of the word, you know, just getting better, discovering better law.
They don't.
They really don't, exactly. But that's probably why they don't ever want to see that position.
And they are regressive in a lot of ways. And
the irony.
I mean, really what a lot of them do, there's a couple memes going around that really sum that up to me. One is explaining how people will cling to a broken system because you can't explain in detail how the better system would work. There's a meme going around that shows, like, you know, some Aztecs throwing a virgin into a volcano, and there's one Aztec saying to the other, well, it's not a perfect system, but it's the only one we got, or it's the best one we've got. And another meme that's even better that shows the disconnect between, you know, people who, I'll just say the meme. It's a picture of someone at an Occupy Wall Street thing getting pepper sprayed by a bunch of cops who are in riot gear, and the person getting pepper sprayed, there's an arrow pointing to them that says wants more government, and there's an arrow pointing to the cops pepper spraying them in riot gear that says more government.
More government.
Yep.
It's beautiful. It's unbelievable. Simple. Yeah. And you know, I wonder if those types of memes are actually starting to root in the minds of the youth. I hope they are, but sometimes this world progresses and goes forward into history, I don't see that they ever come to fruition. I mean, maybe we're still so new in this meme culture that it's going to take a while, but eventually we're going to be able to unlock people from their stasis that they've been in for so long, or even regression, like you were saying.
I don't know. I don't know that the ability to forward visual imagery with the click of a button is going to save the world, but it can't hurt. It can only hurt in that people think that's actual activism. But, I mean, they had a lot of great imagery against the state in the 60s, and, you know, it led to Obama being president and being the cool, hip guy you'd want to have a beer with, so you're ignoring the fact that, you know, he's basically... Who was the president before Nixon? Hey, LBJ. How many kids did you kill today? Ford wasn't the president before Nixon.
Oh, it was Kennedy. LBJ. Right?
LBJ.
Or LBJ. Yeah.
Who some say Lyndon had Kennedy Johnson killed, so he'd become a president, but no one knows. But you know, he was a Democrat, a hip Democrat, and he was bombing kids in Vietnam constantly. And people noticed. You know, they said, hey. The chant was hey, LBJ. How many kids did you kill today? And you know, if you use that chant and substituted Obama's name for LBJ, today's Democrat youth would tar and feather you. But in the 60s, you know, they weren't afraid to go against that. That was the machine. That was the state. That was the man, even though it was Democrats, you know.
The thing that I am hopeful for is that, and I'll just use George W. Bush as an example, is that there were people who were very charged about his presidency, and especially even more charged after 9/11. In fact, many liberals were behind President Bush, whatever that means. I mean, his approval ratings were higher than they ever were in his whole presidency. And as time wore on, people became less and less enamored with George W. Bush. But, you know, after his first term, he gets reelected pretty easily, and there's still sort of this, like, hey, we can do it with this guy attitude. But think about how that changed just in the 3 years towards the very end. We hit the economic crisis of 2008, but even before that, people were like, this guy has got to go. And I am at least somewhat hopeful that it's a non-negligible probability that liberals will have that same sort of feeling towards Obama after another 2.5 years it just not coming to fruition.
No, man, they're going to be like unemployed from a wrecked economy, homeless, in jail for weed, and still wanting to like support him. They're really blind as a group, and somehow the state is hiding the fact that the economy is collapsing. I mean, you look at TV and they're like, oh, jobs are up this month because the federal government printed a bunch of money and hired a bunch of goons or something. That's, you know, that's not an economy turning around. But let's take a break and go to the market and have some real interchange of money here that's in a voluntary way, and then come back for the redemption in the third act.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people.
So, Mike, do you love the World Wide Web?
I sure do.
Why?
And in fact, we were talking about memes earlier. There's a meme going around, and it's a picture of a guy in front of a laptop with his head in his hands looking just disgusted. And it says, gee, thanks a lot, Facebook. Now I'm an anarchist.
I like that one.
Yeah. I love that one. And when you really break it down, you realize what the World Wide Web has given us, or at least I can say in my own experience, it's given me quite a bit. I think you would agree with me, and I think a lot of others would too. And it's the one thing that I had spoke about in the last time I was on your podcast that I saw hope for, because the more we integrate and use the web, the harder it is for people to control us. Yes, there's going to be all sorts of new attacks that we're going to have to protect ourselves from, but it's easier ultimately, I think, I could be wrong, that it's easier to stay anonymous, still thrive in intentional communities, and have all the things that we hoped for when we saw, you know, whatever visions we've had, whether it be you dreaming about Soros owning Northern California or somebody else's vision of Libertopia, whatever it is, it's, I think there's the, that's the path to realize those dreams.
Yeah. I'm pretty amazed how anarchic the order of how the internet works is, and how people who are proponents of it and even build it are statists. It's kind of a real disconnect for me. And even more so than the internet, Linux. I think Linux is the greatest proof of all time of an extremely complicated system being built in a voluntary manner by thousands of people, and it working better than things that corporations make, and being more fixable and changeable and customizable. And the people who made it happen, I mean, really, like, the three main movers and shakers behind it, one of them's an anarcho-capitalist, and two of them are statists, and one of those two is pretty much a communist. It's pretty bizarre to me. It's like, why do you think there needs to be central planning with everything else when you spearheaded, as a group leader, Richard Stallman, this whole thing of creating this system that's as complicated as governments, and it's even used by governments, and it didn't involve any governments? I don't get that disconnect.
Some of the smartest people I've ever known, and I'm not saying this is true with all of the smart people I've ever known, but there's a lot of them that just have incredible blind spots. And not that I don't have my own set of blind spots in my life, but there are some people who are so specialized in one area or a few areas that they miss the bigger picture. They've got this one component of a whole down to a T, but they don't understand how that fits in into the aggregate. And I think you could argue that perhaps Stallman is one of those types of guys that he may not never have really considered deeply with a lot of time and effort a voluntary society. It's pure conjecture at this point, but it doesn't appear that way, at least by his actions. Because you'd hope somebody that was that smart could figure it out at some point.
Yeah, a place, you ever watch any TED Talks?
Yeah, unfortunately, so many of them happen to be so progressive,
yeah, and
sustainable.
And there's so much, there's this thing that I see a lot in society really amplified in TED Talks, where you've got someone who's a genius in some small, narrow field of technology, and they think that means that they should be in charge, or that they have all the answers for how society as a whole can be run. It's a disease that a lot of smart people, especially scientists, have. And it's a problem with a lot of the science fiction that I've read, and it's a problem with a lot of the futurists from the 60s and 70s who basically think the UN should just hire a bunch of scientists and run the world. And they never talk about how laws are implemented. They just say things like, this should happen. You know, and when they say this should happen, they usually don't even see the connection of what that means, is that a bunch of people should go out on the street corner with guns and make sure this happens.
Well, it's speaking to what I was talking about earlier about this, just the pragmatism that all of the social left has. It's never from principle. They always work in midstream. They philosophize in midstream, and it's all about you know, it doesn't necessarily, the ends justify the means, and they never want to let just things evolve naturally or organically or whatever you want to call it. They're almost synthetic in the sense that they want to force this, you know, they want to force this system to occur as quickly as possible. So it's always an argument from pragmatism, never with, hey, maybe these people will actually coalesce and do the things that you want to do, and you can be a part of it, but nobody's going to force anybody into these groups.
I think that the most powerful thing that people can do is come up with a great idea and publish it. A really good example of that is the Free State Project, which one guy wrote a blog post before there was even blogging software. you know, wrote this paper that's probably 1,000 or 1,500 words and published it. And he never actually even moved. He still lives in New York State,
Buffalo, and
works
right.
and works for the state. He's a professor at the college there.
Right.
But you know, all these people did this thing because he thought it was a cool idea, and he published it. It didn't require any guns being pointed at anybody. You know, so I guess the internet is good for that because people can publish ideas. But there's also the huge signal to noise ratio. And I'm kind of dismayed sometimes, not just with the internet, but with, I'm noticing this now with radio, like now that the fiends are getting on radio, when I'm looking at the websites of radio stations and going to call them up, and a lot of them, a lot of talk radio websites, I mean, a lot of them are really, really right wing, and the right wing ones will actually occasionally play, a voluntarist show. And so will a few of the left-wing ones. I mean, something like Free Talk Live or the Freedom Fiends are the only thing that, you know, a total lefty station and a total, like, Rush Limbaugh station will both play. But hopefully there'll be more of that in the future, of less statist radio and more non-statist radio. But we'll see. But the other thing that really bums me out about looking at a lot of their websites is all the fascination with celebrity. I mean, people just doing shows, like doing 3-hour shows on the diamond ring that somebody bought for their fiance, someone famous. Mm. And I'm like, that's what you're competing with when you come out with groundbreaking ideas, is, you know, time wise and people's attention wise is crap like that.
Well, you know, that's kind of the stuff that you see on, like, the Yahoo homepage every single day, the top 10 trending stories.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber and Kim Kardashian, and you think, what fucking world am
and
I
if there's anything,
in?
And if there's anything political, Yahoo's a real serious offender in my yeah. mind. They have so much potential to be something really cool. Because they were kind of first. They were there before Google. You know, they were, like, the first kind of big website that everybody went to as their homepage. And right. now if they have anything political, it's like, why Ron Paul's a liar for saying that right. they declared martial law in Boston? And I'm like, they declared, you know, they didn't call it that, but they did. They kept people in their homes and they pointed guns at them if they tried to leave their homes or not let the police in their homes. So that's
martial
law.
It's all petty bullshit. It's just petty bullshit. But you know what? Michael? I don't think it's necessarily by accident. And what I mean by that is, I think people who publish any type of content, whether you're a radio station, a website, or a podcast or whatever, if you want to be downloaded a lot, it would behoove you to keep your finger on the pulse of popular culture, whether you liked it or not, because you knew, hey, I'm not the one talking about this necessarily, but a bunch of other big players are. So if I want to be anybody, I kind of have to. I don't think it's right. I think that if you're a station or a website or a podcast and you remain true to your principles, I way more respect that. But I think people see the money and they see the writing on the wall and they will just plug themselves into a sick system because they think it's the only way to actually build.
Well, I see that too. And I've always been an advocate of believing that there's not really a vast conspiracy where George Soros drinks owl's right. blood with Obama. I really think it's more like the mainstream media covers the thing that this, you know, that the state is saying and spins it positively, whether it's a left wing or right wing station. I think it's because that's what sells eyeballs and earballs. But I really think maybe they're kind of like a dinosaur thrashing in the tar pits because they're not they're trying to tell people what they think people want to hear, and they're not really paying attention. Because if you look at the comments on any right. statist Yahoo article or any CNN article or anywhere,
they give me hope.
They give me hope. I mean, it's getting to the point where like 50 to 70% of the people posting are saying, you know, this is horrible. This is stated. This is, and they're not necessarily anarchists. You know, a lot of them
might be constitution humpers
right,
or something.
But a lot of people out there are saying, you know, the government is wrong. The government is lying. The mainstream press is lying. They're trying to spin things, and we won't be spun anymore. And I think the internet has a lot to do with that, because without the internet, all you have is the newspaper and the TV and the radio telling you what, right. you know, the echo chamber or what they want to hear. And one could argue that, you know, just because 75% of the comments are damning whatever the article is saying, doesn't mean 75% of the people feel that way. It might mean people who disagree with the government have too much time on their hands and spend more time on the internet and are more proactive about it. There may be something right. to that, but even so, I mean, Russia Today did a poll recently that said that 30% of Americans advocated for an armed revolution. I'm kind of surprised at those numbers. I also think an armed revolution, A, is not possible, B, wouldn't change anything, and C, would be immoral. But I'm really surprised that they came up with that high of a number. And it probably includes, you know, left-wing. It's not just the Tea Party people. It's probably left-wing people feeling that way, too. But
well, it could also be a COINTELPRO kind of thing, too, where they're trying to smoke out the people that would advocate for such a thing so that they can be a lot
comments.
More hype. Exactly. I mean, yeah. Who knows? It's you know, I don't want to be conspiratorial either. It is a very high percentage. It's a lot higher than I would think. But I think B is correct. Even if that were true, and even if people tried to do that, it's not going to matter, because they're just going to replace one democracy with another weird, perverted democracy. And it's, you know, you and I have encouraged people, like, let's not go the revolution. I don't want blood to spill for my ideas. I do think we're somewhat in bondage, but I don't want to create a long, protracted war to win the battle. I
yeah, because they have drones now, too, man. They have drones. Drone beats rifle.
Yeah, and, you know, even with 3D printing and all that good stuff, you know, we're still going to be behind what the military has, like the latest gadgetry they have. And I don't want to give them an excuse. I don't want to give them a reason. I want to try to live. I just want them to go out to pasture. I don't want them to die.
Exactly.
I want Obama to just go away.
I want Obama to retire happy and go play golf and hang out with his
wife. Give the guy an island. Give him and Elizabeth Warren their own islands. I will actually help subsidize that, believe it or not. Because
you know, when you fill out your taxes, this is kind of bizarre to me. There's actually a box you can check that says, like, do you want to donate? I think it used to be $1. I think now it's $3. It says, do you want to donate $3 to the president's reelection fund? And I don't right. know who put that on the taxes, which president, which but that's pretty bizarre. Like, really? Like, you're bending me over and lubing me up with the lube called legal ease and fucking
yeah.
me, and then asking me to make a voluntary donation and keep whoever's in there in. But if there were a thing you could check that would say, Do you want to donate $3 to the old tyrant's retirement home to get them out? I would definitely do it.
Well, think about what it implies too, Michael. If they're saying, do you want to make a voluntary contribution to this thing? What are they saying about your tax form when you're paying taxes? Why don't they say the same thing about those? They don't use the word voluntary.
Well, I think
voluntary.
They do. I think they use the word voluntary. I think that they
in the tax form itself?
They say somewhere in the tax code that taxes are voluntary, and there are tax protesters who have tried to use, not successfully, though. It's like you said, like, you can't use their own legalese against them because they own the system. It'd be kind of like, you know, doing battle with the government in court, and sometimes it works and sometimes it's worth doing, but, you know, it's kind of like if you sued Microsoft and had to go to the Microsoft court building and have a Microsoft appointed lawyer,
yeah.
you know, and it doesn't make sense. It's not fair.
You know, that's a great example, and I hope other people start to latch on to that. You know, when people talk about, like, well, if you don't like America, you should just leave. And I like to say, well, okay, I live in PG&E's coverage zone, and if I can figure out a way to generate power from my house, like from solar panels or something else, PG&E doesn't say, like, well, you're in our coverage area, so if you want to stay here, you're going to have to use us for your energy, otherwise you're going to have to move. And We realized that if they did that, it would be insane, yet people accept the state.
There's actually
being able to do that.
There's a meme that covers that that's going around now that's really funny. It's from Office Space, and it's the scene where the guy named Michael Bolton is, you know, they're saying, why don't you change your name? And he's saying, why should I change my name? He's the one who sucks. Right. And they're talking about the state. Yeah. There's one where it's like, you know, well, if you don't love America, why don't you get out? And he's saying, why don't they get out of me? They're the one who sucks. And I really believe that, you know, why, if you don't love America, why can't you just tell America to get out of your property? You know, I don't want to leave. I like where I live.
Isn't that interesting that we're as voluntarists, we're not really asking for much. We're just asking leave me alone. Stop raping me.
I mean, I've had San Francisco insane drug addict stalker ex-girlfriends that I was finally able to get away from me. Why is the government worse by far than the craziest bitch I ever dated, who was a strung out speed freak who thought I was the answer to all her problems and wouldn't leave me alone?
The irony, yeah, she doesn't, or perhaps not the irony, but the interesting thing is that she doesn't declare a monopoly of force over your life. She might be annoying and crazy, but she isn't like, well, I wrote down on a piece of paper that I'm allowed to do this to you, so you're just going to have to accept it. It's just, another meme that's very interesting, that's, I think, very funny, and you were talking about the media just a few moments ago and how they like to weave this narrative, and it's always in such a traditional good and bad guy type of way. And there's a meme going around, it has a picture of the Joker, and it says what people think psychopaths look like, and it's a picture of a Joker, and he's like, looks all fucked up and smiling and being all evil. And then on the bottom of the picture, it says what they're actually like, and it just shows a picture of Congress. And I think that's the thing that people don't realize. Truly evil people in this world are people that kiss babies, wear suits, shake hands, smile, pretend to care about you. They're not so obviously evil. They're not like so outwardly diabolical that even a moron wouldn't fall for their little game. And it's unfortunate because so many people fall for the real psychopaths in this world. And the media is the perfect portrayer of that. They're just the lens into that world, into the psychopath's world that we have to subject ourselves to.
Well, I think that's very cogent, and it's probably a good place to end this. And the Anarchy Gumbo podcast would like to have you back at some future date, Mike. Makes right.
Thanks. I'd love to be back.
Worms. Say worms.
Worms.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
All with a rotating guest on a spit. Barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.